Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and good afternoon on another Dallas Cowboy 90-Minute Monday here with Chris and Dustin, your hosts of the Stars Align, the number one, at least in my opinion, sports talk radio show on the internet, completely Dallas Cowboy focused and centered. Got some big news and some big announcements to open the show with here today, and that's going to be we are starting a YouTube channel. In order to, you know, I sort of catch up with the times a little bit, plug ourselves, get some video uptakes, get some followers, get people to listen to the show a little bit more. Not that we don't have a lot of listeners already, about 77 live listeners every single day, so we thank you for that. But we're going to start doing that, as well as Parkway Music in Clifton Park, New York. Yes, Parkway Music, Clifton Park, New York, hooking us up with some baller microphones, so we will have a little bit better quality from here on out. So that's the big news in the future here, so that by the time the season starts, even by the time the preseason starts, we're going to sound just like we're sitting in a cushy studio, even though we're sitting on our couches or wherever the hell Dustin is sitting. Dustin, how are you doing today, my dude?
Doing good, Chris. Doing good. How about you?
I'm all right, man. It's a rainy, cold June up here. I know you're down in Florida, so it's probably like 95 degrees, but rainy and cold up here. It doesn't feel like June. It definitely feels like October up here, but that's quite okay. So got some listeners, got some potential callers today as we go over what would be our first topic, and that is, can these Dallas Cowboys repeat their 2014 success going 12-4 last year? Can they do something similar to that again? With all the tools that they lost, but yet all the tools that they also brought in, can they repeat that? Based on their schedule, their current team, I mean, are the boys to beat, are the boys the team to beat, not only in the NFC East, but maybe in the entire NFC? You know, it's possible.
We'll set it down to the Cowboys. Play action. Robo.
Today, they ride in the same limo. Different salary structure. Romo, spin, throw, end zone, caught! Terrence Williams, touchdown, Cowboys! Tony Romo!
Can Tony Romo repeat his success again with the X-Man in the end zone, who still remains unsigned? Dustin, I got to say, man, with this schedule that they've got, they've got to be not just a team to beat right now in the NFC East, seeing that the Giants haven't really made many moves. The Eagles let their entire team go for the most part, and you know, the Redskins are just a dumpster fire. But they've got to be the team in the entire NFC that you've got to think, besides maybe Green Bay, to be the favorite.
The one thing that I'm the most afraid of is the fact that New Orleans gave away one of the best tight ends in the game to the two-time Super Bowl appearance, Seattle Seahawks. So Green Bay, obviously, I'm not a big, you know, Aaron Rodgers is the best QB in the league guy, but you can't ignore it, so you hear it constantly. I still think I really didn't like that we couldn't get to him in that divisional game, but that's more of a sign that our defense was just garbage, that we couldn't get to him, and he's hobbling around on one foot. But I really don't feel like he outplayed our quarterback in that game, as far as his upper body goes and his arm. But
I think a lot of people thought that that entire Cowboy team outplayed Green Bay in that game, except for the final 4 minutes. I think that's pretty well known.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's where, I don't know, that's where me being a fan, I'm just never going to let that one go. But unfortunately, I have to at some point. As far as Seattle goes, I don't see them getting any worse, to be honest with you. So you see what they have. You see what they did last season. They only added a potential future Hall of Famer just to help out Russell Wilson. I mean, I'm seeing reports every day coming out of Bleacher Report and NFL.com that Jimmy Graham's he's crushing it in OTAs and in practice, and he's treating it like it's a game and nobody can stop him and blah, blah, blah. And I think that's more trying to hype him up because people got this feeling that he was soft after, I believe it was the season that he played against the Patriots where Tlaib, like, shut him down, shut him out of the game. And he was, like, utterly useless. And everyone's like, well, maybe, you know, maybe Graham isn't on Gronk's level. Maybe he's not this unstoppable force because it looks like if you just put a physical corner on him, he gets shut down. And so I think he's trying to kind of hype himself back up and make people afraid to play against him. Do I actually think that's going to translate on the field? I personally don't. But I'll tell you what, with a quarterback like Russell Wilson, you better be more willing to go over the middle of the field because this guy's going to run to every single, you know, part of the field behind the line and then eventually decide to throw across his body. And I guarantee you it's not going to be to a sideline because I saw him do it like four or five times last season. He really has no logic behind it. He just avoids and evades as much as possible. And then once he sees an opening, he lets it fly. And I think, I believe it was last season in the playoffs against, who was it? I think it was against Green. No, it was against, wasn't it against Green Bay where he threw this ridiculous lob? And it was like in overtime, or it was at the end of regulation to get overtime.
Oh, you're talking about Russell Wilson. Yeah. Yeah, it was Green Bay at the end of the game. He should have been sacked and just threw up a prayer, and he ended up coming down with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and see, this is my point. For anyone to tell me that Russell Wilson is a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback right now, it's absolute asinine. It does not make any sense to me because he makes the dumb mistake that Romo was making 4 years ago when everybody was calling him the interception machine and, you know, he's too Favre-like and too dumb and he's just talking up prayers. I really don't see him.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, yeah, he's making some of the same boneheaded mistakes. And anybody who wants to weigh in on this, 713-955-0359, the call-in number, those who are listening, who I know you're listening, give us a shout if you have an opinion on this. But, again, he's making some of the same mistakes, as you said, sure. Some of the same bad throws. He's trying to do too much on the run. The difference is he's not throwing the interceptions. He has one of the best interception rates in the league in terms of completion to interception ratio. Russell Wilson seems to get away with these plays. He seems to be bailed a little bit by these plays. I think the only reason why Romo got so much flack was because he just got unlucky. I mean, he made these Favre-esque, you know, easy throws, spinning out, you know, moving in the pocket, and just happened to either be trying to throw against a good defender or just not putting enough on him. And unfortunately, it got intercepted. That's how he got the interception king title, and everyone, you know, started to think that, you know, he was maybe thrown to the other team intentionally, you know, as I've heard a lot up here in upstate New York. But Romo is a different breed than Wilson right now. Of course, he has more experience. He's got better receivers, this and that. But for you to say Russell Wilson is not a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, I gotta disagree with that simply for the sense of this is
a Pro Bowl caliber running back.
Well, this is a Pro Bowl caliber, this is a what have you done for me lately league. And, you know, what has he done? Well, he's been in two consecutive Super Bowls. He's won one of them. Romo hasn't been past, you know, the divisional round in the playoffs. So,
but Chris, don't fall into that you need a Super Bowl to be great. What you just did was you fueled all those people that say, well, how many rings does Romo have? Just because Russell Wilson happens to tag along on one of the best defenses in football does not make him in Romo's league as a quarterback, does not even put
him
in Roethlisberger's
league. He's a game manager. That's what he is. Russell Wilson's a game manager. He's a game manager. He's just like Alex Smith, just like these other guys. But the difference is that Romo's never had a defense to bail him out until last year when that makeshift defense play out of their minds. Wilson happened to get lucky, being a fourth-round pick, going into arguably the best defense we've seen in a decade. And, yeah, his defense bailed him out a lot. But you got to – I mean, I know I hate that argument whenever I get into bar arguments with people about Eli versus Romo. They say, oh, how many rings does Romo have? Unfortunately, however, in this league, to be considered elite, you got to have a resume that people care about. No one cares that Tony Romo, you know, broke the Dallas Cowboys passing record, and nobody cares that he's shattered Aikman and Staubach yards per season and touchdowns per season. What people care about as a run-of-the-mill fan or as a, you know, as an analyst or whoever, what people seem to flock to is, what have you done for me lately? Which I know it sucks, but that's what people look at. And to be considered elite right now, people are going to say, yeah, Eli's an elite quarterback. He's got two rings, even though his defense won both of them. They're going to say Russell Wilson is an elite quarterback right now, even though his defense was a big part in him winning that first Super Bowl. I mean, that's just something that it's going to happen. People are going to say it, and unfortunately, that's what makes you elite. I mean, you look at all the top quarterbacks. You look at, what, maybe the top five quarterbacks in the league, possibly top 10, but top, at least the top five right now, all have at least one ring to their name.
Hold on a sec. I feel like we trailed so far off our first subject that we're probably 10 minutes in just talking about elite quarterbacks. Let's get back
to the Cowboys match this season.
Right. I get it. I just feel like you would have just kept going for another 15 minutes educating us on that. Ready? So I started talking about the Seahawks for a reason. It's because I think they are one of the best teams in the NFC period. And I think right after them is Green Bay. And then I put us, whoever else you want to compare us to. The Saints used to be up there, but you got to believe that they're getting worse now that they just got rid of one of their best weapons. I finally agree with you. I think the Falcons might be a threat this year. So there's a team that might show up that wasn't always there. Another one that I think might show up that wasn't always there is Minnesota. I think now that AP decides he wants to play football again, and him being there might help out the development of Teddy Bridgewater, and that team could be a threat out of nowhere. I think Carolina, if they get Cam Newton some weapons, could be a threat. So I guess my point with naming off all these other teams is it's not going to be a cakewalk for the Cowboys like it was this past year. I think they showed up out of nowhere. Nobody was ready for them. And like you and I have discussed in the past, this league is a copycat league. So now, do you really think it was a coincidence that Washington used a lot of their early picks on offensive line in addressing their offensive line? No, it wasn't a coincidence. Washington realized, okay, look at Dallas. They're dominating with an offensive line in football. Yeah, they need a defense, but they're taking possessions out of the team they're playing because they're milking the clock and they're owning that clock as far as time that they have the football. So I'm going to get an offensive line for my quarterback that can't stay healthy. And even if they decide to move away from Robert Griffin III, they're at least going to have an offensive line. So when they move to another quarterback, they are confident with the ability to keep that quarterback upright so he can fully develop and give him a full shot. So I'm worried that people are going to catch on to what we did, what made us successful, and especially now that what made us successful, half of that is gone to Philadelphia, I think that's going to make things very hard for us to repeat. I hope we go 12-4 again, but I think the likelihood of us going 11-5 is probably a lot higher than us getting back to 12-4 or even 13-3. So I'm curious as to what you think about that.
Well, just to touch on your Redskins comment real quick, yeah, it is a copycat league. I mean, the Giants were doing the same thing, taking Eric Flowers first. Also took Weston Richburg last year. They got Justin Pugh coming back. Betty got hurt. But they still have – they're trying to build an offensive line. The Redskins are looking at this saying, okay, we took Brandon Schiff to go along with Trent Williams because right now Washington has the better running game. Alfred Morris is a man possessed in the backfield. So I think Washington, yeah, is trying to do the same thing. I think that this division, however, is good enough
I'm not saying that they're the best division in football by any means, but I think that it's a competitive enough division where the winner of this division, I could very easily see the winner of this division being a 9-7 team. However, I think that Dallas is just too good to be a 9-7, 8-8, even 10-6. I would see 11-5. I definitely think that we got lucky in some of the matchups that we're going to be facing. I mean, the Patriots, chances are they're not going to have Tom Brady. So, I mean, for us to be facing Jimmy Garoppolo, I'd much rather take that matchup, even though he's supposed to be pretty good. Cam Newton, like you said, Panthers don't really have a lot of receiving weapons. I'm not really worried about Tannehill and the Dolphins. Seahawks, we've beaten already. We've already proved that we can beat them. So the only real teams I'm worried about on this schedule, obviously at Green Bay, of course, we're going to come in, you know, with guns blazing wanting revenge, but worried about that game, worried about the game in Buffalo in the cold weather, worried about one, maybe both of the Eagles games, just because you never know. They're one of those weird offensive teams, and, you know, they did it to us last year. Possibly the Giants sneaking in and stealing one, although I don't really see it, although with Odell Beckham and Victor Cruz, who knows. So, yeah, I could see 11-5.
You're still not worried about Miami?
No, not really. No, I mean, I think that
they
overpaid. They overpaid Tannehill, I think.
I don't care about Tannehill. I'm worried about Sue breaking Romo's leg.
Well, Sue didn't do anything, hardly, in that game against Detroit in the playoff game. I mean, Sue, you know, we neutralized pretty well on our offensive line. We actually do have a caller in right now, a 518 number, so it's a local upstate New Yorker caller. How are you?
Hey, Chris, what's going on, man?
Hey, is this John?
No, it's Mark.
Oh, I didn't even see the number. There it is. Mark, what's going on?
What's up, man?
So you've been obviously listening, I'm assuming, to this. What do you see Dallas doing this season? Do you see us repeating our 12-4 record or even possibly better?
Well, I think they have a chance to. You know, they got to get a couple of pieces in place still. We still got to know who's going to be carrying the football. But, you know, they did surprise me last year, and they're the type of team that they had the success that they had, not only because, you know, when it comes to the running game, not only because they had a great running back, but they were committed to the run, and they had an offensive line to run behind. And if those things remain steadfast going forward and they can get, you know, somebody they trust handling the football, I still think they're going to be able to do it to a certain degree of success. And, you know, Romo's got to stay healthy and play well. And, you know, the defense has got to, you know, continue to step up and make plays when they need them to. So, I mean, I think there's potential. There's a lot of pieces in place. You know, they got to get the Dez Bryant situation figured out because he's probably the worst matchup for DBs in the entire league other than maybe Calvin Johnson. But behind him, he's a problem. So, yeah, they got a lot of pieces in place, but they got to figure some things out first.
True. And for those of you listening out there, Mark is a genius football mind, a college roommate of mine, currently a defensive coordinator. I won't shout out the school, but unless you want me to. But he works with football every day. Man knows what he's talking about. Also a fellow Cowboy fan. So, Mark, we appreciate that. Real quick, though, because we do have to sort of jump on a different topic. We're a little bit up against it here. We're doing a Star or Not segment later on in the show, where we've been talking about rookies. We've been talking about rookies making the team, earning that star in the helmet. Now, obviously, we're out of rookies to talk about. Now we're talking about Sean Lee Morris Claiborne. That's a little teaser for later on in the show. But real quick, Mark, I know you love Sean Lee. I know you're a defensive guy. Do you see this defense sort of producing a little bit better than they did last year with some of the pieces that we picked up in the draft?
Yeah, I'm hopeful. You know, I did actually think that they made out pretty well in the draft. I was really happy with the guy that they picked up from UConn. I actually can't remember his name off the top of my head, but the cornerback, you know, type of guy, athletic freak, proven that he's a tough football player, captain of the team, somebody that the coaches trusted, you know, obviously comes with a glowing recommendation. So he could potentially, you know, there's a lot of question marks there, but he could end up becoming a great pick for him. And, you know, they got away with a couple steals in the draft. So, yeah, they've added some pieces into place. And I do think the unit is well coached, too. You know, they don't do anything particularly exotic on defense, but they do seem to buckle down and come up with plays when they're needed, and they did some good things. So, yeah, I'm actually pretty I'm feeling pretty good about their defense moving forward. And, again, coupled with a strong run game, they got a chance to – you know, continue to, they can continue playing the brand of football that they've been playing, which is why they were successful. They weren't just successful because of certain talented pieces. They were successful because they were committed to running the football and they were able to make some stops when they needed it on defense. I do think that in general they'd be able to continue that. They might, they're going to need to get a couple pieces in place, though, if they want to duplicate or expand on the success from last year. But I do think they'll find themselves in that same territory, and the defense will have to be a big part of that. But I'm fairly confident that they're going to be able to get there.
Chris, can I ask Mark a question real quick?
Yeah.
Yes, not me. Yeah, we do have to move on, but yeah, shoot him one real quick, Dustin.
Hey, Chris, this is Dustin. Thanks for calling in. So I liked your comments earlier about, you know, sticking with the run game and, you know, minimalizing that those risks for letting Romo just go nuts. So do you think moving forward, if we're unable to get a every down back, you know, the Adrian Peterson or the DeMarco Murrays, the Alfred Morrises of the world, if we have to share the carries with, you know, the committee run, pretty much like what we're stuck with doing right now, because there's no way McFadden's going to be that every down back. I think everybody's kind of, you know, settled with that. Do you think that we still need to stick with that run-first mentality when we don't have an every down back in the backfield right now?
Well, you know, I think that, no, I will say this, no matter what, I think they have to continue to show a commitment to the run game, because it's just how you win football games, even as the league continues to develop into a passing league. When you're a team that, you know, Dallas doesn't have this elite core of receivers, they have obviously some very good players, but they don't have this complete core, then the way that you kind of hide that is by staying committed to the run. I don't know, maybe saying run first, that they might have to amend what comes first and what comes next, so to speak, but they're going to need to be committed to running the football in some capacity, game in and game out. So I do think they got to stick with it. I don't know. They may not be able to be as vanilla as they were in the past, but they're going to have to continue to stick with it to be successful. And that's not a negative thing. They're going to have to stay committed to what they've done that's worked for them in the past until, you know, when we start feeling like we're four deep at wide receiver of all these guys that can make plays, then maybe I'd speak a little differently about it. But I think that if they don't have an every down back, they're going to have to be a little bit more creative and, you know, how they space out the carries and stuff like that. But I do think they got to stay committed to it, whether you want to call it run first or whether you just want to say that it just continues to be a very, very heavy focus of the game plan. It's going to have to, because it's going to keep them in games. It's just going to give them chances to win games down the stretch, and I think they got to do that to keep the pressure off of Romo a little bit. And like I said, it's not like they got a couple of good players, but it's not like we have this elite receiving core that stacks up with the guys at Green Bay and stuff like that.
Yep. All right, I agree with them, Chris.
Yeah, I do too. And whether it's offense, defense, whoever runs the football, I mean, I think the only thing that comes to mind is...
You did one hell of a job, and the only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
Yeah! So, Mark, we are up against it here. We are going to move on to the next topic. You want to go with us, or you got somewhere to be?
I could check back in with you. I got to get off for the meantime.
All right. Yeah, give us a listen. Call back in again if you like what we're saying here, and we're going to move on. But, again, thank you for calling. Again, Mark CFL, genius football mind, defensive coordinator in college, was my college roommate. We've had a lot of long talks with him, at least I have anyway. And, you know, one of the most technical guys, he's the only guy that I know who will text me during a game, and I'll be like, man, did you see that catch? And he'll be the one talking about, you know, running through the A-gap and a guy who missed the block and, you know, this and that. And I'm like, I didn't even see that in a lot of time. So, again, genius football mind there with Mark. And if he decides to call back in again, we will gladly welcome him. Second topic of the day, though, however, since we went a little bit longer on that one than we needed to, was the new kicking rules in the NFL. For those of you who don't know, extra points now will be about 30 yards or so out. We have Dan Bailey, Pro Bowl kicker, arguably the best kicker in the league, was just named last season the most accurate kicker in NFL history. Dan Bailey, as I call him, Legatron. Huh? Creative, huh? See what I did there? Legatron. Will he be able to keep up his success kicking extra points from 30 yards out? Or will we see Dallas sort of enable more of a two-point conversion type, college-type offense a little bit this season, especially in bad weather? Dustin, what do you think on that?
First of all, I love Legatron. That's awesome.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's from henceforward, he is Legatron. I love it. So I got stats on Legatron. So he's 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014. So 4 years in the league, still a young guy. What I like about him is that he hasn't missed a game to injury. Now, I understand, big deal, he's a kicker. But let me tell you, man, there are a lot of kickers out there that have missed a lot of time because of groin issue. I mean, they're freaking, you know, torquing that leg back. So it's not like it's a, you know, a position where they're never going to be hurt at some point. So I like the fact that 4 years into the league, he hasn't had to miss any time. He's been, you know, good to go. As far as blocked kicks, so the way I look at it with a kicker is it's all relative to where we're kicking from. If it's, you know, a 55-yard kick, he's going to need it to stay a little bit lower for a little bit longer as it gains height. So those are going to be the ones that are more likely to be blocked versus, you know, a 30-yarder where he can just, you know, lift the thing up high, get it out of reach of those big D linemen trying to make the block. 2011, he had a blocked kick. 2012, zero. 2013, zero. 2014, one block. So I like the fact that he's virtually unblockable. Now, again, it's all situational. It's all based on where we decide to kick from, you know, et cetera. His long kicks, though, I like. 2011, his longest was a 51-yarder. 2012, his longest was a 51-yarder. 2013, it was a 53-yarder. In 2014, we're 56 yards. So I'm digging the fact that he keeps getting further and further away. I hope in 2015 he goes for 60 because I would love to have a guy who's, you know, got the record-breaking leg on our team because I'm all about that. I don't know what the longest field goal kick is ever. I think it's like 62, but I would like him to just keep gradually increasing as the years go on because that would be impressive. So eventually getting there and breaking the record.
Yeah, I think it was 62, I believe.
62,
anyway.
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, we get a guy who can do that. I mean, ideally, do we want to be in the situation where we're going for a 62-yard kick? No. I mean, it would have to be to win the game or something. But I don't know. That's just me being, you know, the idiotic super fan that I am. I want all the records to be Dallas Cowboy records. But field goal make percentage. So this kind of gave me a little bit of, you know, reason to pause because if people do remember, he did miss a few kicks last year. So 2011, he had 86%, 2012 and 2013, 93%, and then 2014 dropped back down to 86. Now, you know, is it a product of the environment? Is he, you know, in bad weather when he's kicking these balls? Are the balls slick? Is it raining, snowing? Obviously, you take this stuff into account, but you certainly don't want to see that percentage dip down any further. So hopefully he can get that back on track. I'm telling you, man, for me, this was a guy fantasy football I reached on because I knew he was a solid kicker. His 50 yards are pretty much a lock, but last year he started to slip up. I feel like he did miss a few deep ones, and I'm a little worried about that, but I think he's young enough and he's still good, you know, good enough to get back and get his head on straight. The biggest thing that I feel like people don't realize is we used to have a second kicker signed to the team strictly for kickoffs. I believe his name was Jones. We got rid of him. He's not on the team anymore.
And
Bailey's, yeah, Bailey's kind of taken that over, so we don't need to waste the roster spot on having three kickers, a punter, a kickoff guy, and then a kicker. My thing is it's obviously, you know, a result of moving the kickoff up, I believe it was 5 or 10 yards. That was a rule that was put in place a couple years back. But his touchbacks have gotten huge, huge, way bigger. So we got 2011, he had 24 touchbacks. 2012, he had 30. And then 2013, what gave him the whole Mr. Touchback nickname, he had 52. And then 2014, he redid it, 52. So he's had 52 touchbacks over the last two seasons. People don't realize how important those are because those are basically, you know, there's no chance this guy is going to bring this ball back for a touchdown. It gives the special teams guys a chance to just take it easy and run down the field as fast as they can, not worry about, you know, any kind of collision or anything. I love the touchback numbers. I think they need to stay up. I would like to see them up around 60. But I really love Bailey. I don't think this new rule is going to affect Bailey. I don't think it's going to affect Gostkowski in New England because he's another leg, just like Bailey. As far as the second-tier guys, there might be some games that are won or lost with this new rule put in place, but I hope, like what you said, the Cowboys are one of those teams that decide to put packages together for going for it and, you know, making every score worth 8 points instead of seven.
True, but I got to say this, though. Dan Bailey, he missed some kicks in the air conditioning. I mean, in a temperature-controlled Texas stadium, he missed one against Houston that would have won the game. Instead, he misses. They go to overtime. He hits the game winner in overtime, of course. He missed the one, I believe he missed one in the playoff game against Detroit, but yet he also missed one against Green Bay. So, you know, here I am as a fan sitting there watching, saying, oh, that's 3 points. Doesn't matter where he kicks from. And then he misses. And then, you know, it's like three misses all season or something. Three of them all in big moments. And, you know, I'm looking at extra points. He was perfect last year in extra points. Did not miss a single one, which as an NFL kicker, you expect it to make every extra point. It's one of those things where if you can't make extra points, you're not going to have a job very long.
Chris, he hasn't missed an extra point in his entire career.
Well, there you go. And, you know, and that's what you expect out of an NFL kicker. But I think just based on what our schedule is, okay, that he will get affected a little bit by this because 30 yards is 30 yards. I mean, a 30-yard kick is not automatic. I'm sorry, it should be, but, you know, these guys are human, and it's not always automatic. And when you look at potential bad weather situations, I mean, you're looking at they should be fine all the way through Tampa Bay, all the way through Thanksgiving. But then when you've got a December game in Washington, that's going to be chilly. A December game in Green Bay, obviously that's going to be like kicking a bowling ball. You know, then you've got a late December game at Buffalo. When you've got a 30-yard extra point in those kind of games with wind and snow and bad weather, it's not always automatic. And I think moving this back a little bit was an attempt by the league to sort of say, okay, well, let's put some strategy into this now. Is a team going to go for two or you know, if a team is down by six, or excuse me, down by seven, scores a touchdown, go to overtime, now it's going to give a team a lot of thought. Do I go for the win or do I go to tie this game and play an extra however many minutes in sub-zero temperatures? Now you're looking at teams, because this league is becoming – a little bit of an option league, a little bit of a mobile quarterback league with Russell Wilson and RG3 and those kind of guys becoming the dominant quarterbacks, even guys like Aaron Rodgers who can move. Now you got to say, okay, wait a minute. If we go for two here, we can win this game, or we can put pressure on them to have to go for two. And then you're like, well, wait a minute. A team like Philly, who's got now Tim Tebow, who would be perfect in goal line sets, because, again, a two-point conversion is now going to be from the 3-yard line instead of from the one, but still, that's a lot easier than a 30-yard extra point in bad weather. So I think Dallas is going to have to sort of look at some of their other options. They're going to have to look at guys like Dunbar out of the backfield if he makes the team, you know, because he's very good at catching swing passes out of the backfield. They're going to have to look at guys like Cole Beasley, Jason Witten, and they're going to have to say, wait a minute, we have a pretty good short yardage percentage here. I think if they had DeMarco Murray, you'd see a lot more two-point conversions because they just hand it to him and he just run up the middle. But now there's a little bit of strategy involved in this, and I cannot say right now that Dan Bailey is 100% automatic in those climates from 30 yards out. You know, even if he's in the air conditioning, he missed a 34-yarder against Houston. That would have won the game, and you know he missed that. So it's not automatic.
I think this is a make or break year.
Confidence in him, but it's not automatic.
I think what you said, you bring up a lot of valid points. I think it's a make or break year. I think this year, because of the different climates that we're going to be playing in late in the year, we might have some snow games. We might have some below zero temperature games that might actually come down to a field goal kick to win the game or not. So
they
I think you bring up a lot of valid points. Yeah, but does this guy offer something that, you know, the Nick Folks in the past didn't offer? The guys that were on the team that had the big leg, but then, you know, they couldn't get those touchbacks up there like Bailey does. You know, I'm wondering if Dan Bailey is just an all-around total package kicker, because maybe there's, you know, some reason to not get rid of him, even though he has a couple missed kicks. You know, maybe because he's not, you know, just a kicker Folk was just the kicker, and then we had to draft the kid that did the kickoffs. That's why Folk didn't make it. You know, we've been what was our other kicker? The one that Romo bobbled for. Grammatica? Wasn't it Grammatica or whatever? The Seattle bobble?
Yes, we had Grammatica. Also, Billy Cundiff was a longtime kicker of ours as well.
Yeah. So, but none of these guys stayed put because they couldn't bring anything more to the show other than, you know, oh, yeah, man, I can hit a 50-yarder. You know, I can hit it straight through. But when the big moments arise, it's been kind of this well-known thing that kickers are the most mentally unstable football players on the field, because all it takes is the slightest little thing to get into their head, and then all of a sudden every kick's getting shanked. Every kick's going wide this, wide that. So if you can get a real athlete that has a leg that is a kicker, then you might be lucky. Now, do I think it's Bailey? I don't know. Do I think it's Gostkowski? I don't know. These guys are still really early in their careers. Okay, kickers can make it until they're 40. I think we've seen that. There's definitely a fair share of guys. The guy out of San Francisco that I think just got traded to the Browns or whatever, he's a longtime kicker or a punter. These guys with their legs clearly can play until their 40s, to the mid-40s. So what's the other one? Robbie Gould, right? He played in Chicago for a while.
Yes.
So
Robbie Gould was automatic, it seemed like. Yeah.
Right. I think if we baby him up and we're like, you know, you got this, you're the best kicker in the league, and we're patting him on the butt after every kick, if he's missing only three kicks a year or whatever, as long as they're not late in the season, game-winning kicks, those will kill you. That's confidence you'll never get back. Luckily, that Houston miss was just, you know, completely forgotten about because he made the game winner. If that didn't happen, maybe we would have never forgot about that. You know, if we had lost that game because of that missed field goal, that hurts. So that's what crushes and cripples kickers' careers, is missed game-winning kicks. And then they lose, and then they come out, and then they miss their next kick in the following game, and then pretty much they're off the roster, you know. So I think Bailey's young enough to the point where we can give him some more time. But I think this year, like you said, it's a make-or-break year. I think it's going to test him. I think he'll have to, you know, he might have to hit a snow game kick. He might have to hit a 20-degree, you know, you can see your breath coming out of your mouth because it's so cold kick in Green Bay. And if he hits those kicks, maybe everybody's, you know, all right, Bailey's a good guy. Let's give him the captain badge for special teams, and let's follow him. But what you were talking about earlier with that whole 2-point package, I'm making a bold statement right now. After what I saw with Cole Beasley when he just showed up late, I don't think many people can cover him in short down, quick slant situations, because I saw him burn some of the best corners in the league with like a little 2-yard slant. And the only reason why he didn't catch certain ones was because the throw that came from Romo might have been a little bit too far to the left or too far to the right. But Beasley and Witten in that 2-point conversion situation package, I think that's an unstoppable tandem for us going for that 2-point if we decide we don't want to kick it.
True. The thing is with me, and we do have to jump ahead a little bit, we can come back and sort of reevaluate this in a minute, but the main thing for me is I think we take a little bit of pressure off of Dan Bailey last year. We leaned on Dan Bailey to keep us in games when we weren't scoring a lot of points, to win games late situations, which we did, But I also think Legatron is going to make some big kicks, but I also think that we are going to go for two in certain situations. Now that it's strategically an option. Before, you didn't go for two unless, you know, you really absolutely needed to. Now with the extra points not being so automatic anymore, for a guy like Bailey, who, like I said, I have the utmost confidence in him. Every time he kicks the ball, I expect it to go in, but he is human. And, you know, there are going to be times when he does miss, he does miss kicks. He missed them last year. So I definitely think that it sets up a little bit of a different situation for 2-point conversions and different things like that. But for the most part, I think we'll be fine. This won't really affect him until late season. And when it does come down to the late season, I think that we're going to have some tricks up our sleeve a little bit. Segueing a little bit, however, is Jerry. Jerry's World, whatever you want to call him, you mentioned something in a production meeting before when we were talking a little bit about this and hashing out topics. Has he learned from past mistakes when it comes into bringing in free agents or drafting certain players? Jerry used to want that star-studded guy, that splash player, that you know, bringing in the Pac-Man Joneses, bringing in the Terrell Owens, bringing in the guys with the big names that would sell jerseys and put butts in seats. Is he starting now to sort of realize, okay, maybe we need to draft smarter instead of drafting, you know, to be flashier? I mean, do you think that Jerry's learning that? Or do you think that perhaps his son is basically taking over the reins and saying, listen, old man, you know, step aside?
I think it's a product of both. I think what happened is, I think his son grew up watching his dad just get annihilated in the local press. The Dallas Cowboys, even though they're, you know, America's team and, you know, they're one of Texas's biggest teams, they get their share of negative criticism and negative publicity, I'll tell you that much, and I know for a fact. So I think his son grew up watching, you know, Jerry get just absolutely beat down in the press about certain roster moves or certain mistakes he's made in the past and, you know, bringing on certain guys. You know, you mentioned two right there, Pac-Man Jones. I mean, other than Chris Berman, you know, doing the footage of Pac-Man going, you know, doing the whole pack thing when he's, you know, returning a ball, I really didn't see Pac-Man Jones do much. I know he did have those highlight return moments, but I don't think he was worth the problems that we brought on when we brought in Pac-Man Jones. Now, as far as T.O., I will argue with anybody till the end of, you know, the end of time that I think Terrell Owens is the hardest working wide receiver to ever play in this game, because he is not a guy who came into the league with physical natural ability like Randy Moss, just this freak ability. And, you know, he's a guy who he literally is dedication. He's a workout warrior. He's a guy that just busted his butt and developed into one of the greatest wide receivers ever.
Yeah, I mean, again, if anybody has a take on this, whether it's Mark still listening, a couple of guys that I gave number to, 713-955-0359, call me number, chat with Dustin and I about this topic. But, you know, I think that Jerry is sort of still his old stubborn man, you know, that he's always been. I think his son is now sort of getting in his head a little bit and saying, hey, listen, look at what happened last year. Look at what happened when you listened to me last year when we took Zach Martin instead of, you know, what was his name, Johnny Manziel. You know, look what happened in that sense. And Jerry, I think, is starting to realize it a little bit. But I also think that if Jerry had the reins himself and his son had nothing to do with this organization, I think we would see Johnny Manziel in a Cowboy uniform. I think that we would see, you know, guys like, I don't know, overpaid guys, for instance, Cromartie or one of those guys with stupid contracts coming.
You still there? I don't know if we lost Chris there for a sec, but if everybody can still hear me, as far as, you know, Jerry and learning and not making the same mistakes, what I was talking about was the Terrell Owens issue. Parcells didn't want T.O. on that team, and Jerry went out and got him. And I think that the whole Romo thing might not have happened. He might not have got his chance with Bledsoe if, you know, if there wasn't a breakout wide receiver like T.O. there to catch those, you know, those terrible Hail Mary throws from Tony Romo. So I think that one of those moves was a gamble that worked out. The whole, you know, the whole Terrell Owens move worked out. It pushed out Parcells, who's one of the greatest football minds ever, but it at least helped put fans in seats for the short term. As far as that Pac-Man move, I really didn't see the positives of the Pac-Man move. I don't know about you.
Sorry about that. There was a bit of a
there was a big lightning strike right outside and some thunder, and it just threw everything off. So for those of you who heard silence, do apologize for that. It had nothing to do with the phones. The internet just had a blurp there for a minute. So if there was silence, hopefully Dustin kept talking. But if he didn't, we do apologize for any silence there. But no,
Chris, think about this, right? Before before you kind of went out, I was mentioning Terrell Owens. Parcells made that very, very clear. He didn't want anything to do with Terrell Owens. He doesn't want attitude guys. He wants the basic guys that'll come in, you know, the modest, quiet guys, those Travis Fredericks of the world that are humble and just preach team that you necessarily aren't into. That's what Parcells wants on that team. And all of a sudden, Jerry's like, no, this is a superstar guy. He can't find a home. They want him out in Philly. He can come in and he can produce. What did he do? He showed up, and maybe Terrell Owens has just as much, to do with the flourish of Tony Romo as anyone else. Because you got to think about it. If Tony Romo didn't have that breakout workhorse wide receiver to go get those horrible, horrible Hail Mary passes that Romo would throw up into triple coverage down the middle of the field, maybe we're not talking about Tony Romo right now as the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, you know? This goes back to that argument of where I think the wide receiver has just as much to do with the development of the quarterback, and it goes both ways. And that was what we talked about last week, I believe, or the week before. So I think as far as these gambly mistakes and these gambling moves, you know, the Pac-Man one, I don't see how it panned out for us. I don't think it was worth the negative press. The T.O. move, however, I do think it was worth the negative press, because even though it might have been a rift in the locker room and even though it might not have been what certain people wanted, T.O. was a baller. He was a gamer. He showed up every game. He put butts in seats, get your popcorn ready with the T.O., you know, touchdown dances and everything. He was a big-time reason why I've tuned in every week, because I wanted to see if T.O. was going to burn the corner, you know, and these are all Jerry Jones moves that, you know, some people liked, some people didn't. Just like this Greg Hardy one, the Greg Hardy move. I think I like that move, but that's an old school circa 1990s Jerry Jones move. That's not a Stephen Jones move. Stephen Jones, like I said, has been sitting back watching his dad get annihilated in the press for making boneheaded acquisitions and giving ridiculous amounts of money to washed up players. So I think what's going to happen ultimately is slowly but surely, Jerry's going to pull back, and slowly but surely, Steven's going to take over. And then I think eventually this team will be a very, very difficult team to reckon with, because I think the Sun is starting to realize the winning template. Build the offensive line, build the defense, and then plug in your weapons wherever you want them.
Yeah, but I also think that Jerry is too stubborn to really allow even a family member to completely take over the team. Jerry came
out.
He's
going to die eventually.
Well, yeah, everybody dies eventually. But, I mean, he was very adamant in his displeasure for not taking Johnny Manziel.
Look at Oakland. Al Davis, no one ever thought he would give up the reins. Well, he died, and now look at Oakland. They're looked at as the better Bay Area California team now, now that Al Davis has been out of the picture.
I don't know about that.
That might be what happened.
The Raiders
give me a break. You're going to tell me that
10 years.
Oh, God. I'm telling you, the Raiders are better than the San Francisco 49ers today. Book it. The Raiders are the better football team today than the San Francisco 49ers.
Okay, today, but the last decade, they've been a joke.
No, I'm talking about now that he's died, now that Al Davis is out of the picture. Yeah, and now, and look at, they got Brandon Carr. They just drafted a good wide receiver. They got a whole bunch of veterans on the defense. These are all moves that who knows if Al Davis would have made. I'm just saying, eventually Jerry's going to be completely out of the picture.
Yeah, I mean, eventually. But I think what's going to happen, however, is that Jerry – that's the only way he's going to be out of the picture, is that he is going to die. Jerry, he is a guy in good health. He does run a lot every day. He does keep himself in shape. He looks decrepit, sure, but he's as healthy as a teenager. And, you know, he's still going to have his name and his mark over the organization. And I do see one or two more splash picks or splash free agent acquisitions coming in who may or may not pay off simply because Jerry's going to say, I want to sell jerseys. I want to get my $1.2 billion investment back. I want the Cowboys to be, you know, the Yankees of football. Jerry is going to, you know, he's going to do that eventually. His son may not agree with it always, but in the end, in Valley Ranch, Jerry has the final word. Again, 713-955-0359. I've had a couple of people talk to me here on the chat board. I've had a couple of people message me on Facebook that are listening. Again, we appreciate that very much, and we apologize for the little blurb in audio there. We do have a tornado warning here in upstate New York until about 8 p.m. That's kind of scary. So that's probably why the internet keeps cutting out here on me. But Jerry, I don't necessarily feel that he's learned his lesson. You might, I don't. I think Jerry is more apt to say, you know what, we're winning right now. Okay, I'll let my son take, you know, do what he's going to do right now because we won the East and we almost, in fact, we should have been in the NFC Championship game, you know, last season. So I feel like that happens. If Dallas slips up, if we don't have a good year this year, which I don't see happening, but if that happens, if we do slip up a little bit, Jerry is going to pull back the reins and say, whoa, wait a minute. You step aside. I need to bring in somebody. He's going to have his tunnel vision that he's been having. He's going to want to go out and get the biggest name guys, throw money at them. I mean, Jerry come out. Jerry, he is
with what money,
PO'd
though?
To
we're
this day
up against
that we don't have to
mark salary cap. We're already up
well,
against
yes,
it with the salary cap, man. How are we going to – how
that, that, that's never affected
God.
Him before. He'll cut players. He'll cut players who are productive to bring in big names. He's done it before. So, I mean, he's going to do what he has to do if we slip up. If we have another year, 12-4, 13-3, you know, we win the Super Bowl, which we can only hope for, then – yeah, maybe Jerry will say, okay, you know what, maybe my son knows what he's doing. But if Dallas isn't, you know, the best team in the league and people aren't talking about Dallas and they're not in the news and they're not in the press and they're sort of fading into the abyss here, Jerry is going to lose his mind and he's going to start opening the checkbook. Whether it's a personal checkbook or not, Jerry's going to do what he has to do. That's just what I feel about Jerry. I love him. He's my grandpa's name is Jerry Jones. I mean, he's, you know, means a lot to me being the owner, but he's boneheaded, he's hard-headed, he's a stubborn Texan, and he wants to win. He's the George Steinbrenner of the NFL, hands down.
I agree with you, and I think it's a case of Jekyll and Hyde. I think that one of them is that, you know, I'll do anything to win, and then the other one is that practical, no, calm down, we need to do this.
Well, Jerry Jones is also the only guy, only owner in the league to fire a coach who won two consecutive Super Bowls.
Anybody can watch that documentary and know why that all happened, okay? Jimmy Johnson was just as much of a headstrong guy as Jerry was, and Jimmy treated Jerry like he was a second-class citizen in his own team.
You fired Tom Landry for what reason? You fired Jimmy Johnson, who just won you two consecutive Super Bowls and puts you on the map, okay? Then you go out, you get Bill Parcells, you run him out of town. And, you know, you've had three of the best coaches in the history of the league in your organization, and you run them all out of town because it's your way or the highway. That's why Jerry Jones gets a lot of the negative press that he does. Up against it here, 713-955-0359. You know, call in number. Anyone who's still listening, Mark, I know John back home is also listening. Again, we appreciate that. All the comments, email feeds coming in left and right here. We will have the microphones pretty soon. We will have a little bit better quality, and hopefully the internet doesn't skip out here and I don't get hit by a tornado. But Jerry Jones' segment leads into something interesting, which is Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, who is the, you know, the party animal, the, you know, the good-looking guy who's from Texas, Texas oil money family, was a extremely successful college quarterback in a tough league, in a tough division. I mean, he's the only quarterback to go into Alabama and win in a long time. He doesn't translate to the NFL. I mean, you look at guys like winners, quote-unquote, Tim Tebow, awesome college, arguably the best college football quarterback ever. What do they do in the NFL? You know, same thing, you know, you look at guys, Ryan Leaf, Kim Couch, you know, guys who were expected to be superstars coming in the league, and they were busts. Johnny Manziel almost had a big blue 2 on his chest wearing a Dallas Cowboy jersey, and if it wasn't for his son ripping up the draft card, we would have Johnny Manziel, we wouldn't have Zach Martin, and who knows if this offensive line would be what they are today. We talked about in the production meeting a little bit, could Johnny Manziel be a Cowboy in the near future? If he is that a good move or a bad move? As well as we're going to go around the league here a little bit and get into some division winner predictions. And, you know, because we talk a lot about the Cowboys, but there are, you know, 31 other teams to discuss, and there are, you know, other divisions besides the NFC East. As much as we really only care about the NFC East, there are other divisions. So first we're going to hit Johnny Manziel, though. Could he, in your opinion, if things don't pan out in Cleveland, which right now they don't look like they are, do you feel like Johnny Manziel could be a Cowboy in the near future?
So we had talked about this behind the scenes, I think it was last week, and actually even on the air I brought up something about Johnny Manziel and you called it blasphemous. So I know you're not exactly the biggest Johnny Manziel fan. But
I loved him in college. Loved him in college.
Yeah.
Dude can't play in the NFL.
Listen, my thing is this. If you're good enough to be looked at as one of the best quarterbacks of college football, you're good enough to be on an NFL team. Now, if you're good enough to be on an NFL team, it's only a matter of studying and hitting the weight room until you're good enough to be an actual player starter. My whole thing is with guys like Manziel, with guys like Tebow, they're not going to, you know, load up the stat sheet, but it seems that they have that little X factor DNA to them, meaning the game's on the line and something weird's going to happen. I remember the year that Tebow was playing for Denver. I saw him step back. I don't remember who he was playing. Might have been Miami. The whole defensive line formed this circle around him, and he did a 360 before he decided to plant his feet and throw the ball. I've never seen a quarterback in my life drop back, get basically a pocket of defenders around him, decide to spin around completely, 360, and then replant his feet and throw the ball. That is, like, the first time I've ever seen that. And most analysts were like, look at this moron. He doesn't know what he's doing. It wasn't that. It's the fact that he thought to do something that was so far outside the norm that it worked. Now, Johnny Football, it's the same thing. You looked at his footage from the very few times he touched the field. He didn't complete many passes, but there were some times where when he dropped back, some, you know, stuff started to hit the fan, and then he was able to pick up the first down with his legs. He's small. If he gets hit really hard by a middle linebacker or any kind of linebacker, will he hold up? Obviously, I don't think he will. But I'm saying he's not that much smaller than Russell Wilson. And you know what Russell Wilson's doing in this league. This is my biggest problem with people that, you know, overanalyze and, you know, can see from afar and they just rule people out. These guys play the most important position of the game, and half of them, like the Tebows of the world, are built like real football players. They're not built like a quarterback or a kicker, so they can contribute in other ways of the game. It's a damn shame that Tim Tebow is not a starting quarterback in this league, because I don't think he ever got a chance, and I don't think the guys that gave him the chance that he did get wanted him out there in the first place. So I don't know if he's there in Philly to sell tickets or to just confuse people. I don't see Tim Tebow beating out Sam Bradford, and I don't see Tim Tebow beating out Sanchez, because I think we already saw that game in New York. So as far as Tebow goes, his career might be cut short. He might be in a suit, you know, analyzing college football and guest starring on First Take in the future. Who knows? He's got a great football mind. We all know he's super religious. I wish him the best in the future. I'm just bummed out because I really do think he could have made some noise in the NFL. He obviously, everybody says, well, he won a playoff game. I mean, he threw a quick slant to Demaryius Thomas, and Demaryius Thomas ran for 60 yards. So I'm not giving him credit on that one. It wasn't like a 40-yard bomb to win the game. All he did was throw a slant over the middle, and then the wide receiver did all the work. So I'm going to take that ammunition out of everybody's mouth for all the Tebow lovers. As far as Manziel goes, I think he needs a full season behind the center for some team. Now, whether it's a rebuilding team that has no weapons and you just let them. Nobody's giving him a chance. Everybody's looking at him. I don't know if the rehab thing's going to help or hurt him in the future because it makes it seem like he's responsible and he's trying to repair his personal life. But what the hell does that do for him in the NFL? It doesn't do anything. So it proves that he's growing up, I guess, but that doesn't translate to the football field. I don't care about his personal life. I care about what he does on the football field. And no one's letting him on the football field, and that's what's irritating me. But Cleveland, it seems to be, you know, crap or get off the pot time because – there's not really – Hoyer was his only real competition at QB. Hoyer bounced. He's with the Texans now. So I think this is Johnny's job to lose in Cleveland, but he has a very run, smash-mouth, Rex Ryan-type coach that really doesn't want that spread option QB and has been put on the record by saying that Manziel was forced on them and that he didn't want to draft Manziel, but the owner decided, all right, let's do it. So they went with Manziel. So I don't know. He's an awful fit in Cleveland. I think ultimately Cleveland's going to release him if they don't give him the opportunity this year. He has just as big of a following as Tebow. So if he's sitting at the backup and the starting QB that they have in is blowing games, they'll hear you're going to hear Manziel chance, put Johnny in the game. Absolutely. Ultimately, that coach isn't going to want to deal with it. He's going to either get released or traded for bargain value. Do I think Jerry will go get him? I don't think right now because we don't need him right now. But I'll tell you what, if Romo goes down with an injury out of nowhere and Manziel's name's up there, maybe just like anybody can run behind that offensive line that's a running back, maybe any, you know, run-first QB could run behind that offensive line, and maybe Johnny Manziel could work behind the best offensive line in football because you could give him that extra second that he normally wouldn't get on another team to become a QB and analyze and read the field. But honestly, it's a lot of ifs, man, and I just don't know.
For all the listeners out there and all the Cowboys fans and the callers and, you know, John Clow is listening and Mark CFL is going to be calling in again in a little bit to talk about Sean Lee. To all of those diehard Cowboy fans out there, I apologize. Dustin has officially lost his mind. He is going senile early, I think. Johnny Manziel is not an NFL quarterback. He was a great college quarterback. We've seen several times guys transition well when they were successful in the college league. We've seen more times than not, you know, guys transition poorly, just like guys like I think Marcus Mariota. I don't think he's going to be very good. Of course, he's going to be on a bad team, just like Johnny came into. Cleveland's obviously much better now, but I don't think Johnny Manziel.
So you think Manziel has been on the field long enough for everyone to give up on him? He got like four starts.
I think that Johnny Manziel played against the Swiss cheese Bengals defense, a Bengals defense that can be beat. He looked terrible. He looked like he had no idea what was going on out there. I think that he's lost the locker room because of all of his shenanigans. The offensive line in Cleveland is not a bad offensive line. They're probably top 20 offensive line. They parted like the Red Sea when he was out there. It's almost like the offensive line was giving up on him and letting him get knocked around.
How can you give this guy an honest chance if his own teammates are giving up on him? You're making my point for me. He's never gotten an actual shot.
Because you look at him in practice. I mean, he lost his job to Brian Hoyer, who I think is a average quarterback to begin with. I don't see Johnny at 5'11", 190 pounds. You know, he's a stick figure out there, basically. You get a big,
you just described Russell
linebacker.
Wilson.
Here's the difference with Russell Wilson, though. Russell Wilson
has a coach
one
that
of the highest. Well, he has one of the highest football IQs. He has a high IQ off the field. He doesn't get himself in trouble off the field with partying and this. And I know Johnny went into rehab for alcohol and all this, but I think Russell Wilson understands that he is the franchise guy and he's going to make all of the smart moves on and off the field. I think Johnny's been given everything his entire life. He was driving a Beamer in college. He comes from a rich family and, you know, he's been the star the entire time, and for him to come into the league and just be another guy, I don't think mentally worked well with him. And now I think he's been beaten up, bashed emotionally, mentally, in the headlines. You know, he expected to come in and start in Cleveland. You saw how displeased he was that he didn't get drafted by Dallas and that he dropped all the way down to the Cleveland pick at 23. You know, of course, Aaron Rodgers that happened to as well. We all know what happened with him, but they're not even in the same universe at quarterback. But Johnny Manziel is, I think he has a career in the league, just like I think Tebow has a career in the league. I just don't think it's that quarterback. I think if you want
so
to
what
transition
the heck would you
Johnny
have him
Manziel,
do?
Well, I think if you want to transition Johnny Manziel into a Cole Beasley type receiver or a guy to catch swing passes out of the backfield or a guy to come in at you know, H-back and be a speed guy in option packages, something like that.
At 180
sure.
pounds, scrawny, you think he's going to be a halfback in the National
Look
Football
Look at Cole
league?
Beasley. He's the same size as Cole Beasley.
He's not a halfback,
that dude is
though.
Fast.
Yeah, he's not a
well,
yeah, Cole Beasley.
Maybe
is a
not
smart
maybe
receiver
not a halfback, but there are. Well, look at Darren Sproles. Darren Sproles is one of the fastest men on the planet, and he's smaller than Johnny. And he just lightning speed goes up the middle. I think
this is
Manziel,
my point. Johnny Manziel doesn't have that raw speed. He has evasive maneuvers. He's elusive. He, you know, that's Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel doesn't have like a 4.240 to preach about here. We're not talking
no,
about a guy that has all these raw. Yeah, exactly. He's slow. He's just able to squeeze out of bad situations and make things happen when people don't for 1 second think he's going to be able to transition to a halfback or a wide receiver. That's not a chance in hell. As far as what you were saying about Russell Wilson and Johnny Manziel, personalities are completely different. I agree with you. Russell Wilson has done everything right. Johnny Manziel has done everything wrong. I'm just saying you can't give up on a kid who you only gave 4 opportunities to. You got to give him a full year. Give him a full year. If he only throws for like 1,500 yards and he throws for 40 interceptions and 2 touchdowns, I will completely agree with you, Chris. You're right. He's garbage. No one's giving him a shot. Everybody keeps putting him in, throwing him into the pool with sharks and being like, swim, dude, swim. You got to give him an opportunity. Put him in a system with a coach that wants him. The Cleveland coaches did not want him. Nobody wanted him. The owner wanted him. The owner wanted him to sell tickets, to sell dog pound T-shirts. He was brought in as a circus act to sell T-shirts and to bring press and publicity to Cleveland. He did that. He just didn't get on the field. That's all.
Well, that's also why I think Jerry wanted him to, you know, put Manziel on the back of the jersey. You know, these guys, these scouts, these professionals, this is what they do. And they got a lot of flack for completely just eviscerating Tim Tebow when he came into the league. Oh, you know, Herm Edwards said, oh, he can't play. The dude can't play, you know. And, you know, you look at guys like Tim Tebow can't throw the football. And Tim Tebow, he's an example of a guy who would be better at a halfback-type position or a fullback-type position. But I think Johnny's going to be holding the clipboard his whole career unless he gets the absolute perfect situation, which is what he had in Texas A&M, where he had Mike Evans. He had a great running game. He had a great offensive line. So would he be a good fit in Dallas? Perhaps. But based on what I've seen so far out of him and the decisions that he's made on the field, I know he's only played, one full game and a couple of preseason games, but he'll have his highlights. He'll have his SportsCenter highlights, but I don't see him ever being a franchise guy in this league. He's just too small. He doesn't have the football IQ that Russell Wilson has, and he's one of those guys where if he came to Dallas, sure, I'd support him because I support anybody that puts the jersey on, but I wouldn't have faith in him. In fact, right now, if we had Johnny Manziel and we let Dustin Vaughn go, I would rather have Brandon Weeden in the game than Johnny at this moment because I know that Brandon Weeden at least is going to drop back and, you know, throw to the other guys, where I think Johnny's going to try to do the whole thing himself, and he's either going to end up getting hurt or making a bad play, fumbling the football, doing whatever he's going to do. So, I mean, who knows?
I'd take Manziel over Weeden any day of the week. That's a bad call.
That's where we defer, I guess, and I guess that's part of being a fan. 20 minutes left to go, 713-955-0359. This is the Stars Align Cowboys 90-minute Monday, even though it's only really been about an 87-minute Monday because we did have a couple of minutes there of silence, maybe about a minute or so because of the good old tornado warning here in upstate New York. real quick, because we do have to get into Star or Not. I'm waiting for a particular caller to call in and talk about Sean Lee, because this kid loves Sean Lee. But we will get into that at the very end if he's able to call. He does have some work commitments and things he needs to do. Real quick, division winner predictions for around the league. Right now, I got to sit there and I got to say, okay, who's winning what based on the offseason moves that they've done? Right now, looking at the league, I'm going to go AFC first, and I'm going to end, obviously, with Dallas. I'm looking at the AFC East. I don't think the Patriots have it this year. They've won it 10 years in a row. It's going to be either Miami or Buffalo. Right now, Miami's got the Miami's got the stronger quarterback, but Buffalo's got a great defense, a great offensive line. The Jets also have a great D-line, but right now, not to get long-winded, I'm just going to run through them here. I'm taking a surprise pick. Shoot me if I'm wrong. Buffalo shocks the world. The Bills win that division this year, especially with this whole thing with Tom Brady. In the Central, I think it is the Bengals division to lose right now, although the Browns did get much better. The Steelers got better. The Ravens, I think, are good. Right now, though, it is the Bengals division to lose. So right now, Buffalo, Cincinnati. In the South, obviously the Colts, no-brainer pick there. Out West, you've got Buffalo, Kansas City, Oakland, and San Diego. Right now, with Peyton Manning, even losing Julius Thomas, you got to think, Denver's probably got it. I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say that Andy Reid has the team that he wants now with Macklin reuniting with him. I say the Chiefs win that division this year. So in the AFC, Buffalo, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Kansas City, the two wild cards being New England, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say Baltimore here. I'm going to go out on a limb and say New England and let's say Pittsburgh as the wild card teams. In the NFC, I'm going to go west to east here. Right now, Seattle, obviously the best team in that division, but don't count Arizona out. But I'm going to say Seattle wins that division. In the South, there has not been a repeat champion in a long time. I believe Carolina is the only team to do it recently. They won it this past year at 7-9. However, I am going to say in the South, it is probably the Falcons division to win this year if they stay healthy. So I'm saying Seattle, Atlanta, Green Bay in the Central, and of course our Dallas Cowboys in the East, with the wild card teams being Arizona and Carolina.
If I'm forced to pick, I didn't know we were doing this. As far as
I just kind of made it up.
Yeah, thanks for the heads up.
no problem.
As far as the AFC goes, I'm going to completely disagree with you. The Pats are going to win that division, not even close. As far as if the wild
even
card
after,
will come out.
Even after losing almost their entire team in New England?
Yeah, it's Bill Belichick is the greatest coach in the game. It's not even close. I got the Patriots winning the East. Maybe the wild card comes out of the East with the Bills and the Jets.
And
that's a possibility.
Okay.
As far as Central, I'm taking the Steelers. The South, I'm taking the Texans over the Colts. I think J.J. Watt's going to be a big-time weapon for them. And I think Kansas City, I agree with you. Now, as far as the NFC goes, I'm taking the Seahawks in the West. Boring. I'm going to take the Panthers in the South. No, Falcons. I take the Falcons. Maybe the Panthers give them a shot, but Falcons in the South. And then the North, Packers, easy. And then Cowboys in the East.
Yes. If you didn't say Cowboys in the East, I'd be very upset with you. I also think St. Louis could sneak in and maybe sneak into a wild card position here, as the Rams have gotten a little bit better throughout the years. We're going to do a Star or Not, whether we get the caller that we're expecting to get or not. I know he does have a phone interview with somebody, and I don't know if he can get off in time. So if so, great. If not, we will see him next week, as he does love the show and he does want to be a part of it.
But starring on is going to be Sean Lee and Morris Claiborne, two guys who aren't necessarily fighting to earn the star on their helmet, but are going to fight to be, one, starters, two, going to fight to even be on a roster, in Claiborne's case, and they're going to fight to be a star in this league going forward. Both guys are still young, but both guys have had a lot of injury concerns, Sean Lee being the bigger factor in that, as he can't stay healthy, but the middle linebacker who flies all over the field, locker room leader in Sean Lee, you know, and I really wish if we could get him here in the last 10 minutes, I'm going to try to get on the horn with him, have my production people give him a shout and see if we can get him on the line, but because he has a great Sean Lee analysis, and if, you know, if not, we can always recover next week and talk a little bit about that, because I'd love to get Mark's take on Sean Lee, but I think Lee, if he can stay healthy, is a great linebacker. I think he's smart, great field IQ, a leader, you know, makes all the tackles, is always around the ball, hard hitter. I think Sean Lee, if he can stay healthy, really anchors this defense, really makes this defense tenacious, as well as smart. But Morris Claiborne, I loved the pick when we went up and got him because I knew we needed corner help. I knew we needed secondary help, just like I was excited to get Byron Jones this year. But he has not been, other than that interception, the game-sealing interception in the game with against the Rams this season, other than that game, he has really been kind of a disappointment to me anyway. And I don't see Morris Claiborne really doing anything now with a loaded secondary that we have with coming in being, who is it, Byron Jones, whether he plays safety or corner. Obviously, Derek Carr, we just gave all this money to Orlando Scandrick. I don't see him even really making this roster other than for a depth position. But, Dustin, I will get your take on both of these guys in a minute. We do have Mark calling back, and Mark, we do appreciate you getting on the line here. All of the talks I've had with you since we graduated, Sean Lee Central, centralized, you seem to love this kid. Does Sean Lee, if he can stay healthy, his defense, and does he make this defense better?
Well, he definitely makes the defense better. You know, I think when we're talking star or not, as much as I do love him, I certainly haven't changed my opinion of him as a player when he's playing. The constant injury after injury after injury makes me wonder. I don't know if I can sit there and go, yeah, he's a star, because to be a star, you got to consistently, you know, play in the league and be very productive year in and year out. I don't know if he'll, given his injury history, I don't know if he'll be able to rise above that in the long term. Now, if he's able to stay healthy, do I believe he'll be an impact player? Absolutely, because he's been that way. I mean, I actually just looked up the stats a second ago. I mean, he's got 11 picks in 4 years, which, you know, two of them for touchdowns. That's impressive for any linebacker, let alone one who really only averages playing about 10 or 11 games a season because of injuries. So, you know, he's definitely a tremendous player. I love him coming out of college, and every time that he's been healthy and been around for them in the pros, he's been doing big things. He's an impact player as long as he's available. In terms of whether or not to call him a star again, that remains to be seen. I almost feel like I got to lean the other way as much as I love him because, I mean, I don't know if he'll be able to play consistently with all the injury problems. So I don't know, but if he's healthy, he's going to make an impact. I don't think there's any question about it.
And real quick, before we get Dustin's take, Morris Claiborne, your opinion on Claiborne,
yeah,
with this now loaded secondary that we seem to have?
Well, I'm hoping that the competition will push him. I think he's been a little bit underwhelming, you know, but he's very athletic, he's very talented. You know, they draft him for a reason, so you know, hopefully he'll be able to help him out. I think that, you know. Yeah, so obviously he was a big time pick for him. So I'm hoping the talent around him will push him to get better. I'm sure that he'll be a contributor. I don't know if he'll be the guy that they've wanted him to be ever since they drafted him. I think he's been a little bit underwhelming. But, you know, he's still a young player, hasn't been in the league for very long. You can't give up on guys like that. So I certainly haven't given up on him, but I'm not ready to go, yeah, he's going to be a great player, because so far he hasn't quite lived up to it. But I do think he has a lot of tools where he could develop into, at the very least, so, you know, someone who's a playmaker for us. So there's hope there, and as I said, there's hope for Sean Lee too, but he's got to stay healthy. I mean, when the kid's healthy, he's been a playmaker his whole career, he just his career has been so spotty because of all the injuries.
True, true. Very good. Thank you, Mark. Roll with us for a couple minutes. We got about 10 minutes left to go here on the Stars Align Cowboy 90-Minute Monday. Dustin, what do you feel about these two guys?
So, Claiborne, I mean, obviously I agree with both of you guys. He's the younger injury problem, so that jumps out at me. He's only 25. Lee's 28, so we all know once you hit 30, some stuff goes down. It's just too bad that stuff went down way before he was 30. The thing that really kills me is that Lee got hurt last year by our new rookie taking over the offensive line, Zach Martin, which really sucked.
Well, he didn't even really get hurt by him. It was non-contact. He just stepped the wrong way.
Yeah, but it was literally, I don't know, they were both like just kind of walking through something in practice. I remember the exact, clip, and it looked like Martin, barely touched him, and then Lee dropped to the ground. He just twisted his knee. But as far as, Claiborne goes, 2012, 12 games played, 2013, 10 games played, 2014, 4 games. He has an interception in each year. I just don't know, man. Like you said, we're loaded at corner right now. Well, I mean, I say loaded lightly because, none of these guys are, Darrell Revis or Richard Sherman, but we're deep anyways at the position. And I don't know. Do I take him over Brandon Carr? No, because I think Carr has at least produced and stayed on the field. But, I mean, you know how I am. I like guys that aren't paid that high and that will produce. So, I mean, I don't know. I give youth a chance over veterans, always. I always like bringing in, younger, faster guys. But they got to be healthy. I say no for Claiborne. I just don't think it pans out. The tiebreaker for me between Claiborne and Lee, they're both injury prone, is Rob Ryan. Rob Ryan said that Lee was the smartest defensive player he's ever coached in his entire football coaching career. So Rob Ryan said that. I love hearing coaches talk about intelligence and leadership in players. And, guys say that about Ray Lewis. Guys say that about even Sherman. I hate him as a person, but people say he's very intelligent. People say this about Lee. Rob Ryan, one of the greatest defensive minds, said that Lee was the greatest defensive player he's ever coached. That, to me, jumps out at me. And that makes me think, I agree with your buddy that called in. I agree with you. I think if Lee can stay healthy, he can be a game changer, a defensive leader, a defensive captain. I mean, his stats, 2010, he had 2 picks. 2011, he had 4 picks. 2012, 1. In 2013, he was leading the team with 4 interceptions before he went out with injuries ultimately. So I think if he can get a full year, he's a ball hawk. He sees things before they happen. He's a tackling machine. He gets to the spot fast, and he makes plays more than anything.
True, and, I think, as Mark pointed out, 11 picks, 2 of which for a touchdown. When he's healthy, he's a field general. I think if we can keep him healthy, which playing him, limiting him in OTAs has been good so far, sort of putting him in a linebacker core where I don't think he's going to get every single snap is good too, because Sean Lee was the only linebacker we really had for a while that was worth a penny. But now we've got some good linebackers. Rolando McClain has resurged and remade himself into something. Anthony Hitchens was a good rookie last year, has done some things. So for that, I think Lee doesn't necessarily need to have all the pressure on him that he has had in the past.
Maybe we need to call up Chip Kelly for his sports science stuff and figure out what milkshake Lee needs to drink to stay healthy.
Yes, he does. Well, hopefully it's something made of titanium because the dude is glass right now, as you like to put it. But Mo Claiborne, he had that interception in the Rams game last year, sort of that sealed the deal. But like you said, he's been underwhelming. He's gotten beat a lot. Against big receivers, guys like Dez, he's undersized, and he's not really physical. He's more of a finesse corner based on what I've seen. So finesse corners don't necessarily succeed in the league. You have to have a good mix of physical and finesse, like what Richard Sherman is, like what Nnamdi Asamoah was back in the day, like what, guys like Cromartie and Patrick Peterson are. They have speed, they have good hands, they can get up on you, play press coverage. Mo Claiborne sort of sometimes gets lost in the shuffle, it seems like. Him and Carr seem to be very similar in the way that they play, both of which I think are better than, obviously, Terrence Newman was, but both of which are kind of one of those that can have a breakout, huge game, but yet they can also, you know, kind of just disappear in the grand scheme of things, especially against a good quarterback. So for Starr, I say if Sean Lee, it's all about health. Sean Lee, I think, yes, obviously a star, great linebacker, one of the best linebackers in the game when healthy. Mo Claiborne, even if he stays healthy, I unfortunately, for being a first-round pick and a pick in the teens, I forgot exactly what number he went, don't necessarily see him being anything more than good. I don't see him being great. I don't see you know, looking back in the Cowboy history books saying, oh, man, Maurice Claiborne. You know, he's not going to be a Deion Sanders. He's not even going to be one of the better quarters we've had the past decade. So, again, like you said, with the Johnny Manziel thing, not giving up on him. I'm not giving up on him, but I don't have a lot of faith in him at this moment. We've got just under 5 minutes to go here. Just a quick recap of what we've talked about here today. Can the Cowboys repeat their 2014 success where they went 12-4, went to the divisional round, kind of, at least in the eyes of Cowboy fans, got screwed on that call in Green Bay, and the rest is obviously, as you know, history. We talked about, will the new rules affect Dan Bailey in the kicking game with the bad weather coming late in the season, playing on the road in cold weather in December with extra points now being 30 yards out instead of 19 yards out. We talked about, has Jerry Jones learned from past mistakes when it comes into bringing big-time free agents who don't pan out or drafting splash picks in the draft who end up being busts. And then we talked a little bit about Johnny Manziel. Had a little bit of a heated debate about Manziel. Dustin seems to like him, seems to think he'd be a good fit. I don't think he's going to be anything more than a clipboard holder if he's not broken in half first. You know, do I see him being a Cowboy in the near future? No. I think Jerry might want to go get him, but I think his son is going to say, listen, look what he's done in Cleveland. Why don't we go get somebody who's worth it, somebody who's like a Romo, somebody who's tough, who's a warrior. I mean, Manziel, you breathe on him, and you know, he goes out of the game limping. So, yeah, it kind of sucks, but that's my take on it. We talked Starr or not, this time not rookies. We talked Sean Lee and Maurice Claiborne. Sort of had similar opinions on him. We want to thank Mark for calling in. Mark Theophil, again, a great defensive football mind, a defensive coordinator at the college level. One of the most brilliant football minds I've talked to. He's probably going to be a regular caller as he is a lifelong Cowboy fan, just like I am. Also, listening out there, I know John is listening. John Crowell, thank you very much for that. We have currently double-digit listeners, which is amazing. So, again, all of you for your support. Thank you very much on that. Dustin and I worked really hard to put this thing together. We will have a little bit better quality in the future. Right now we are not necessarily the best audio quality, but we do try to make up for it with audio clips and things like that. So for today, huge set, a little bit of a different topic range. We've talked mostly about positions in the past. We've talked about quarterbacks, running backs, defense. Now we kind of were all over the board. And, you know, it feels good to kind of have some conflicting opinions. This has kind of been a love fest between us for the first couple of shows. So it feels good to kind of get on each other a little bit about certain things. But until next week, 90-Minute Monday, wrapping up just over a minute to go. So here's what we're going to do. The Dallas Cowboys, the boys.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Yeah. Hold on, hold on. Hold on. We them boys. Hold on. We them boys. Hold on, hold on, hold on. We making noise. Hold on. Hold on.
There we are. We are them boys, Dustin and Chris. Same time, same place next week, knuckleheads. We will see you then. Mwah. We love you.